You're listening to the TrekMate Family Network.
The Battle Bridge is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com.
Worf, Solus, Sue, report to the Battle Bridge. I'll join you in a moment.
Ensign, secure connector levels.
Crusher, Carteno, Gleason, report to the Battle Bridge.
Mr. Data, Mr. Worf, I have a special mission for you.
Note in ship's log that at this start time, I'm transferring command to the Battle Bridge.
Oh, boy. Yes, guys, I do not like Discovery the way it's coming out lately. And you are listening to The Battle Bridge, a TNG podcast where we discuss everything about Star Trek The Next Generation. And tonight's episode is Dark Page. And there's some really stuff going on today I'm going to tell you about. But reviewing Dark Page has kind of been hard for me. I'll tell you why in a bit. First, we do have some guests on. And by the way, if you can't figure it out yet, I'm Lou from Nebraska. Take it away.
And I'm Jane from Tier 4 London, despite the tiers only going up to Tier 3 as of last week.
And I'm Chris from Scotland, where we've always had Tier 4.
Not quite the same, though.
And, I mean, my internet speed is pretty darn fast. I don't know if it's Tier 3 or 4. What are you guys talking about?
It doesn't matter. It's level of not.
Oh, yeah. We're not there yet, but it's possible. My goodness. Chris, otherwise known as Kidden McDuff, how are you today? That was my best Scottish accent, by the way.
Yep, always. No, I'm good. Yeah.
Yes, it was. Yes, it was.
It's funny that we're reviewing Dark Page today because I woke up, put the telly on, checked that the horror channel, I believe, on the UK shows Star Trek The Next Generation, and of 178 episodes it could have been shown, the first one that was on this morning was Dark Page.
Oh, is it bad or good?
I was quite happy, but I quite like Dark Page. That's why I want to talk about it.
Yeah.
I had no idea.
Wow. So the last time we had you on, it looks like it was for Relics, Season 6, sometime 2 years ago. How have you been since we've talked to you last?
When was that about?
Oh, I don't remember.
That must have been before March.
Yeah,
March, everything fell apart. So I think we've been stuck in perpetual March since.
It's amazing since... Yeah, I have your February 22nd, but I'm not sure if that's true or not. Yeah, it's amazing we've covered 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6
episodes.
6 plus 6, 12 episodes since March. Jeez, they suck. I think we're getting better. We're getting better. Now it's a matter of getting them out. I compete with my wife for computer usage since hers. She has to use it for work now, so she wins out. And that's more important. And then it's like, do I really want to do it? No, I'll do it tomorrow. I got to get on top of the ball. Either that or James, you're going to... I did the whole thing for TNG. You're going to have to do it all for DS9.
Okay, here's the thing. Okay,
that's going to happen.
Have kids old enough to employ them.
Oh, really?
So, yeah, I mean, so my the oldest is 16, got a 14-year-old, got a 12-year-old. You know, in particular, the boys are really into coding and stuff. So, you know, I'll get them to do it and do the editing and things like that. I mean, what else are they going to do? Homework?
That's true. Yeah, well, I mean, I guess if one of them is good at editing, just don't let them edit me out all the way. You know, that's happened before in the past. Remember that? I won't go there. Let's see. Okay, well, anyway, Chris, it's good to have you on again. So today has been strange, guys. I found out today that a girl I went to school with passed away last year. last August of 2019. I had no idea. I've seen her once since grade school, and let me tell you, I've talked about her on the show, but I couldn't find her. Well, now I know why. So it was completely sad for me today to find out that she had passed on. And then I went and watched Dark Page, and I thought, oh, geez, how could this possibly be? But do you ever feel like you're getting signals from people who have died? Do you guys ever think that? Like, you think of something or a song comes on the radio when you're thinking of somebody, and it makes you wonder if they sent that song to you? Does that sound crazy or what?
Wait, okay, so it doesn't sound crazy. Now, the first thing to mention is that there are a lot of coincidences in the world, and you only necessarily attach significance to coincidences that you notice. So I have a thing where I will often, you know, during the day I'll check the time, and I've got this thing for whatever reason, and it's probably because I happen to like numbers, but I will always notice when I check the time, and it is 22 past 10 in the evening, which for a 24-hour clock is 22:22. Mm-hmm. And I'll always notice that. And I've been doing it for like 30 years because it would, you know, the time would have been displayed on the video recorder or whatever. And I always notice it. Now, I don't think that 22:22 is coming up more often for me than for other people. But it is something that you always notice. And mm-hmm. we've had a... another thing that always gets brought up is, and now I don't know if everyone has this, but we've lost a lot of people. We've lost a fair number of people this year. And in every significant death that we've had in the family, we have always had it followed by a weird incident involving a bird. And my wife is kind of convinced something's up. Well, not convinced that something's up, but it's at least noteworthy. Now, as a rational scientist person, I doubt that people are coming back to hassle us as birds. But there are certainly things that you kind of, you will catch and you'll probably place more significance on if it happens to be on your mind, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense. Once in a while, quite often, I'll look at the clock and it's 9:11, 9:11. Now, of course, you know, you guys don't have a clock that says 999, so you don't get the correlation, but I mean, I get it a lot. I see 9:11 almost 12 hours a day, or twice a day. Every 12 hours, it seems like I look up, there's 9:11. I don't know why. But, the reason why I mentioned that is I was going to go out and work today. I actually did go do a little bit of driving today, and that's when I got the text from, another school friend of mine saying that she saw something on my podcast, which I didn't know she was listening to the podcast, if she is. Hi, Kim. But anyway, she had mentioned that she heard me or either heard or saw me say something about the girl named Jeannie. And she wanted me to know that she had passed on last year of cancer. And of course, it was really, really sad. But, you know, it was in grade school. I mean, I think she joined our class about the third grade, and then we went on through the rest of the year. And I got to be honest, man, I fell so totally madly in love with that girl about the time we were 11. She came to my 12th birthday party, and I had the chance to kiss her, and I didn't do it. I mean, I was so crazy about this girl, but I was too afraid to do it. And I've regretted that for 40 years now. But I was trying to get in touch with her, and I'd like to talk to her about things, you know, see how she's doing. And then I find out she's gone. So I get my first run where I'm going to pick up somebody, and I turn on the radio. And you guys are familiar with the Beach Boys?
Yes. Yep, okay. They crossed over. Yeah.
Yeah. The song Don't Worry Baby was playing.
So I'm not familiar with the song, but...
Oh, really? Okay. Well, look it up. It, you know, it goes like, don't worry, baby. Everything will be all right. So it's like, you know, How does something like that just, yeah. No, I do believe it. Back when my dog Minpin died, and I was devastated for weeks, 2-3 weeks in a row, I would walk out of the room that I was working at, and overhead playing in the music was the song Brave. I Want to See You Be Brave. And it's like every Tuesday for 3 weeks, I walk out of that room and that song was playing. Either it's in some kind of an amazing loop at the right time, or it was something being sent to me. And lyric in the song is, you know, maybe there's a way out of the cage where you live. And I thought, cage, well, you know, that's because Minnie used to love the kennel, the cage. She'd lay in the kennel a lot. And I don't know. I just feel like maybe it is our own subconscious giving us things. But at certain times when you see certain things or you hear certain things that attribute to that person, I don't know. I can't believe it's all just random. And I don't know. We'll see. So, but reviewing Dark, doing notes for Dark Page was rather difficult today, especially at the end. So, I almost canceled, guys. I really did, because right now I've cried so much I got a tension headache. Oh, it hurts. My head is killing me. But I took some ibuprofen and some Tylenol headache, and I'm hoping it goes away soon. But we're not going to record again for 3 weeks, and I just want to get this thing done. You guys are giving me a break from my thoughts. So, let's go on. Dark Page. It is the 7th episode of Season 7 of Star Trek The Next Generation. First aired on November 1st, 1993. Written by Hilary Bader. Directed by Les Landau. Guest stars for this one are Majel Barrett as Luoxana Troi. Norman Large as Maquess, what was his name?
So Maquess.
Maquess. Okay, that's it. Maquess. They should put like M-A-Y-Q-U-E-S. Maquess. Kirsten Dunst.
Is it spelled the same way as Maquess is spelled?
No, it's M-A-Q-U-E-S. Maquess.
Look, and that's how they spelled the Maquess without the E-S. It's I-S, right?
It's I-S. And,
I thought it was, M-A-Q-U-I-S. Maquess.
Yeah,
that's indeed. Maquess, yeah. See, they should have... yes.
Okay. Kirsten Dunst as Hedril and Kestra Troi, which are rather confusing, actually. Amick Byram as Ian Andrew Troi, with the kind face. Co-starring Andriana Wiener as Kestra. And... well, I already mentioned her, so she doesn't get a computer computer listing today for Majel. So what do we think about this episode? This is really dark. This is strange. I'm sorry, Chris, I usually let you go first, but this is strange. It kind of builds up a little slowly with these telepaths that have no concept of spoken word, and they don't even telepathically use words. They telepathically use images, which I wish they could have figured out a way to show us how that was done instead of a guy just looking at someone with an intense look on his face. Can you imagine the direction on that? Okay, now look at her, look intense. All right, no, more intense. Okay, more intense. Okay, now, but I would have liked to have seen a little bit of the imagery. But in the end part, I don't know how you guys are going to... I don't know how you're going to come down on this, but the end justifies the episode, I believe. How about you, Chris? What are you thinking?
I think there's a lot of interesting thoughts and moving parts in this episode. There's no B-plot in it. It's all A-plot. But even within that A-plot, there are several things that are happening that I think make a lot of sense now, that maybe I didn't appreciate when I first seen this episode. My memories of this episode, well, that it wasn't that great. I wasn't that interested in it. But having watched it again today, there is a lot in it that I probably didn't appreciate previously. So it's grown in my affections.
Yeah. All right, James.
Look, I'm going to come across as a monster here. I don't like this episode. I spoke to you last week, Lou, and I said I don't have any positive recollection of this episode, and I will obviously go into it and watch it again. It's the first time I've watched it in probably 15 years or so. But it didn't really do much for me. Mm-hmm. So let me, you know, let's go through this and see why I'm wrong, because I'm sure I'm wrong.
I'm not sure you are, James. I'm really not. And had we done this episode last week, I probably would have came down on it a little harder. But today I'm looking at this episode in a whole different light because of the hurt and anguish at the end of this episode and the hurt and anguish I'm feeling today. It just, I don't know if one speaks to the other or is, you know, my emotions today, is it guiding my thoughts about this episode? I have to say it probably is. I don't know. When I think about what would I have done, how would I have rated this yesterday versus today, it probably would have been a little lower. But still, in the end, I like Luoxana episodes. I like Luoxana episodes that are upbeat and cheery, where like she always is. This one here is just too dark for her. Do you agree?
Well, you get a couple of, you know, fun Luoxana points at the start of the episode, right?
Yeah.
But fairly quickly she ends up in her coma and it turns on to a you know, Troy plus the, well, it's really, it becomes the Troy show at that point. Yeah, and one thing, I mean, Chris didn't mention, look, this doesn't have a B plot. This doesn't have any kind of like additional padding, right? And even from a kind of like a sci-fi perspective, there's not much. There's not much going on that couldn't be. You know, I don't think you gain a huge amount by putting it into a sci-fi context. So, you know, someone has trauma that they have to deal with, and the, you know, and Troy, Deanna's talking to her mother in order for her to overcome this. Yeah. Now, the fact that she's in a coma, the fact that she's been dealing with the aliens, the fact that she's the only person that could, you know, telepathically communicate, all of these things are kind of rather irrelevant, right? If you just strip it down, it's someone that's gone through trauma that doesn't want to talk about something, but it's kind of like destroying them from the inside. So, you know, when you have something that really doesn't need to be in the sci-fi setting or the Trek setting, and then you don't even have any scaffolding around it, I just didn't feel that it did much for me. But I can be wrong. I'm not necessarily right on these things.
Yeah, well, I'm not sure. Chris?
I think James is right that the main plot of it doesn't benefit overly from being in a sci-fi show. But I think the fact that it is in a sci-fi show allows them to add certain bits to that that gets you to the point. I mean, ultimately, it's the psychology of repressing a terrible event in your life and the problems that can cause. But when you're a telepath, it can cause other problems, and when you're a telepath, you can work your way through it in a different way. So the main thread doesn't necessarily need to be a sci-fi show thread, but the fact that it isn't a sci-fi show allows them to do more with it.
Okay. All right. So what do we think of the, what are they called, the Karen? I believe they were called the Karen. I don't remember. Like, I'm not sure how I'm pronouncing that. Like Karen, the K-A-R-E-N, or
no, it's Cairn.
It's Cairn, isn't it?
Yeah. C-A-I-R-N.
Oh, okay. Well, that's close. Karen. Okay. Well, what do we think of them? It almost looks like part of their brain is on the outside of their head.
Yeah. I had the same thought. It's the usual forehead of the week kind of alien. But I think they're quite interesting. And the fact that they're telepaths, but they're telepaths in a different way from what they're used to. It made me think that how telepathy actually works within the science fiction. Telepathy is not a real thing, but really not. But if within sci-fi shows, telepathy comes up quite a lot. So it's the mention here that what the betazoids do is they communicate telepathically using words, whereas the Kern are doing it as an image base. And it may, I don't know how other people think in their own head, but I tend to do both. Like, there's certain things I find very difficult to verbalise to people to tell them what I'm thinking because it's an image in my head. But in other times, I will talk to myself in my head. So I'm communicating the words, and I can imagine that's how word telepathy would work. So yeah, I can understand the concept of there being two different ways to do telepathy and it being quite difficult to switch between them.
Yeah, it would. And, you know, they're coming along pretty good. They're able to talk. I find it fascinating that, you know, they weren't, they had no idea of spoken word, but yet they had mouths, they had tongues. What were they used for?
Eating
and tasting.
Licking an ice cream cone.
They had the tongues, I don't think they had vocal cords, did they? Because Hedro mentioned that she had like a vocoder or whatever it was called. Voice box thing that would let her talk because I don't think they actually had that. So that was another interesting point on top of it. So we've got one set of telepaths that communicate in images, one set of telepaths that communicate in words, and then they're having to translate that again into a form of vocal communication that they're really not used to. So the analogy here would be that the Kern are like foreign workers coming to an English-speaking language country that don't speak English, so they're having to learn not just the meaning of words, but also the feeling of words as well. So you watch several times in this episode where Makeweez is struggling to find the right words, and he's struggling to turn what he knows in his head into those words as well. That's something I've seen in my own life, that there's people people I've worked with that their first language isn't English. So you see them sometimes struggling to find the right word, or it's interesting when you talk to them because they think in their own language, but if they're here long enough, they start thinking in English as well. It's interesting how it works. And then there's another point that they make in this episode that, I think it's Data that makes it actually, that Hedro adapts a lot quicker than the adults do because she's a child and children are basically built to learn. And that's something I've experienced in my own life because I don't know if you know the app Duolingo, when you can learn the language. I've been using that for some time. I've spoken English my entire life. I've never really needed to speak any other language because I've grown up in an English-speaking country. I've went abroad a few times to other languages, or other countries with other languages, but it's only like on holiday, so you you pick up a few words here and there, but you're not really communicating fluently. And it is, I find it very difficult to learn a new language at my age. I did do German when I was at school, but it was probably easier to learn there, but I've not really needed it, so I've forgotten most of it. But I can imagine if you gave the same kind of lessons to a child, they would pick it up a lot quicker, stick a lot more, and they'd be more fluent in whatever language than I would as an adult.
Oh, yeah. Well, you can't teach an old dog new tricks.
Safe.
Nope. So, okay, so like you said, I think, James, you said that there are a couple funny parts about this one. Like, of course, the old Mr. Wolf thing, and hello, Mr. Wolf. And you could see he's just about to correct her when he goes, hey, not worth it. Don't bother. That was pretty funny. But from there, I mean, even before she walks over to Worf, you could see, just talking to this little girl, she's now starting to get headaches and something's going on. Do you guys get the impression that her subconscious blocked Kestra out completely? Or that, you know, she was getting a headache because as soon as she saw this little girl's face, it reminds her of this face that she, you know, of a child that she once had.
So I've always interpreted this as being kind of triggering rather than something that was, you know, fully blocked, right? I can't imagine that it was, you know, fully blocked, because we later discover the diary, the fact that she went back and deleted it, and all of that kind of stuff. So to me, it feels like it's something, you know, it's a memory that she hasn't processed, or an event she wasn't able to process, especially because... but by the way, when did Deanna's dad die? How old was Deanna when then?
I think they said in this episode she was 7 when her dad died.
Okay, so it would have been... So I would imagine that when you're looking at the diaries and the period that's blocked out, that 7-year period, it was 7-year period up until when Deanna was born, right? So I kind of, you know, obviously you learn in this episode that Laxan has gone through a kind of fair amount of tragedy even before, you know, the fact that she lost her husband. I've always interpreted this that this is just something that she didn't process, and then it's triggering rather than something that she actually locked out through, through this part of the Betazoid brain kind of thing.
Well, I don't mean like she chose to disregard or forget. It was that I think her brain just got rid of it or blocked that information from her to be able to actually think about for this long.
Yeah, I think that Loxana's brain has blocked that out for many, many decades now. However old Deanna is, to be honest. But I think working with the Cairn has mentally exhausted Loxana, so that when she sees Hedro, who I'm assuming isn't the first 6 or 7-year-old girl that she's run into in the years since her own Kestra's in that accident, but because she's exhausted, that's been enough to then start breaking it down, so that block that she's had in her mind has just been eradicated. So I think it's a combination of the two. I think when she says that she's exhausted from working with the Cairn, she's telling the truth, but it's obviously not just that, it's also the fact that Hedro reminds her of Kestra.
Okay. Yeah. I got the impression that. So, in other words, 2 years ago, she wouldn't have been able to talk to Deanna about it because she's so her brain is so blocked it from her that she doesn't even either remember about it or even know about it at this point, until she sees Hedril's face, and that's what starts to unblock things for her. That's what I got out of it.
Okay. Lou, one thing I just wanted to mention this, but they do a quick tour of, you know, Laxana's greatest hits at the beginning of this episode, whether it's going with Worf or doing the thing about why aren't you married yet. But the best one, right, is when they're talking to Picard. When she's talking to Picard, it says, oh, their way of communicating is so much more efficient. Had we been speaking like they do, this conversation would have been over ages ago. And Picard, you can see him go, oh, really?
Really?
Yeah. Now, none of this is groundbreaking, right? And we've trodden this path before. But, you know, that at least made me chuckle.
Of course, yeah.
The whole point about Deanna not being married yet, and Laxana's trying to set her up with Make-Wish at one point in this episode as well. That's all very that's another thing that's quite realistic, actually, is that, like, once females get to a certain age, they get a ridiculous amount of pressure to settle down and have a family. So I'm assuming, like, at this point, Deanna is at least like 30, because that seems to be the cutoff.
Yeah.
But once you're 30, you know what, you should be married by now, you should be having children by now. That's a part of the 24th century isn't any more enlightened.
You
still get this pressure from the mothers.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, not but that, it's a selfish thing. Like the I want to be a grandmother thing. That's exactly what it is.
Oh yeah. Well, I mean, you know, she's pimping her daughter out to this guy. Yeah. Your mother says that you need a wife or you need a husband. And you're not gonna believe this, but I need a wife. Yeah. Oh man. You could see the anguish on her face, like, oh, you gotta be kidding me. Looks over at her mother like, I'm gonna kill you. And what is Luoxana look like? All smiles. Don't thank me. It's okay. Oh, you're right. There were some good moments at the beginning of this, but and like I said, when it turned deep and dark. So there was some light page, and then there was some dark page. Hey, that's why we got dark page. Okay.
It makes me make sense as well, because he would be straight to the point. There's no reason he wouldn't be, because he's used to communicating in images. So for him to come out and say, yes, I'm looking for a wife, is perfectly normal in his eyes. So, yeah, that made sense as well. The only thing in this sort of early part of the episode I didn't understand was the comment that Luoxana was talking to Worf and said his brain couldn't handle it. But then she turned to Riker and said his brain couldn't handle it either, so don't be so cocky. But isn't it true that Riker can hear Deanna's thoughts because she taught him how to do it? They very rarely use this in The Next Generation, because she was teaching. It was in the pilot, it was in Encounter at the Farpoint.
Did it come up anywhere else?
I don't remember. I think they used it in one other episode at some point, and I can't remember which episode it was. But if he can hear those thoughts, I'm not suggesting he could communicate properly with the Cairn, but you would think maybe they would be projecting into his head as well. Or maybe it's just too different between the imagery and the words that he couldn't hear it. But yeah, it's annoying. They never really use that point that Riker can hear Deanna's thoughts all that much. I'm sure there's another episode that does it, and I can't remember which one it is.
So okay, having said that, though, in the Encounter at Farpoint, we hear Deanna's thoughts, and it's implied that Riker can hear them, right? But maybe he's just clueless and he doesn't hear them.
Maybe, well, yeah, because she asks him and the thoughts if he can still remember how to hear.
Yeah.
And he just kind of looks at her as if he can.
Yeah. Well, no,
was it Manat? Was it Menage a Troy? Because okay, the three of them were called captured together. Yeah, so Menage a Troy, so you couldn't hear it.
Yeah, so Menage a Troy would have been the most obvious place for it to happen, right? So, but I don't remember if they do. I imagine they must.
I think it was when they were captured by the Ferengi. Mm-hmm. They had some sort of communication between them that Riker knew what the plan was because Deanna had communicated it to him or something along those lines. It's been a while since I've seen Menage a Troy.
Yeah. So do you
incidentally some great mods play by them. Especially when he gets captured with the two toys.
So do you think they could read Deanna's thoughts?
Who?
Makewiz?
Makewiz. I mean, do you think he can just naturally see what she's thinking in images? Or does she let him see it?
Because the only thing we see them do is him projecting his thoughts into the mind of either Luoxana or into Deanna. We don't see him accessing anybody's, which is probably why Worf doesn't trust telepaths. I only mentioned that as well. I wouldn't trust a telepath because he can read everything that's in your head, and some thoughts should remain private. I don't know if Makewiz could read, but he could certainly project.
Huh?
So, yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah, she said that, don't worry, Mr. Wolf, they can't read your thoughts. It's you're too unsophisticated or something.
Thank you.
So, I don't know. Yeah. Okay, because I wondered, yeah, if when he was talking to her about her need of a husband and his need of a wife, I can imagine he could look at her eyes and and all of a sudden see Riker plastered all over her thoughts and go, oh, I see. That would have been interesting. You know, oh, he looks over at Riker and goes, oh, I understand.
Really? Would it have been interesting?
I would have been interested in that.
I'm sure. So, Lou, for whatever reason, what came through my head is that, are you familiar with a TV show called Extras?
No. Not that I
Okay, so what do you want to do after this, after we finish recording? Look up the scene that, so it's on the My Comedian called Ricky Gervais, and he has a scene with Patrick Stewart. Now, the premises of the series is that he's a minor actor that's trying to make it big, and he finds himself in situations where he'll be talking to like famous people, and this is, you know, basically one dude that's, I think he's working on a script or something, and he ends up talking to Patrick Stewart about stuff. And anyway, the tangent Patrick Stewart goes off on when he starts talking about his, you know, his idea for a film, or his idea for, yeah, I think it's a superhero film, reminded me a lot of what you just said then. So look that up in due course, and it's probably about a 4 or 5 minute clip. But if you haven't seen it, it's actually quite a funny little interlude.
Yeah, I see it on YouTube, so I'll put that in the back burner. I'll check it out when we're done.
I'm surprised you haven't seen this already. But
oh, anyway. No. What's a British soul? I probably wouldn't have, you know.
So, Chris, you know what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah. I've not really watched Extras much, but I know the series you mean.
Yeah. Actually, no, I haven't seen what Extras either.
All right. Okay, so, yeah, what do you think about Luoxana busting into Riker in 10-4? That was so... I hate to say this, but it seemed like both him and her, being Riker and Luoxana, really don't sell the acting in this one for some reason. I didn't quite get it. It just seemed, the way she's tapping on his shoulder seems so forced or something. I don't know. But, oh yeah, and everybody is sitting there watching. If it weren't for you, she'd probably be married. And, Ma, let's go. She gets her out of the room. Oh, I don't know why I did that. Tell Riker, I'm sorry. But yeah, you can see she's falling apart. And it all started from looking at that little girl.
Alexander makes a good point, though. I mean, is Deanna too tied to Riker at this point in her life? I know, obviously, the two of them get married and later on and go on and have children, but at this point, they don't really look like they're going to be together. So, is Riker interfering with that? Because any time Deanna has a relationship in the Seven Seasons, it comes up at some point that she almost goes to Riker for approval.
Yeah.
Is it all right if I'm dating this guy?
So maybe
I'm on record. Well, coming in the 10 forward and confronting her with it, but maybe she's making a point that's in there in the first place, and she's actually thinking that, and there might be an element of truth to it.
Yes, so I'm on record by stating that you know, Troy should not be wasting her time on Riker in any way, shape, or form. She's way out of his league. And I think I think Roxana's completely correct. I mean, what? Why is she wasting time with this dude? Mm-hmm. You know, look, he had his chance. You know, he's now gone all, you know, fat and bearded. Mm-hmm. Troy should move on.
Mm-hmm. And not only that, it happened to her twice. Both Will and Thomas, they both did the same thing. Imagine that, huh? Why even bother with them? Okay, so Luoxana, Deanna, and of course a couple, Karen, including the little girl, go to the Arboretum, and the girl falls in the water. Oh, sorry. Gets out, and oh, how cute. And then she looks over, and Mom's on the ground, passed out. So had that girl never fallen in the water, would the story had taken the twist it did?
Or it would have taken a bit longer. I think it was going to go the same way. It probably would have taken a bit longer, but I think that obvious falling in the water is the thing that tips over the edge, as we find it later on.
Okay. Well, So they come up with the idea that, you know, using Mequis, you can go into Mama's mind and try and figure out what's going on. But it was kind of confusing to me the way not only you get the wolf trying to stop you, you hear, "Help me!" But then when you get to Mama, she's like, "Leave me alone." Wait a minute. You wanted help, but now you want me to leave you alone.
Yeah, that sounds perfectly normal to me. I can have different voices in my head talking to me all the time. I know I sound crazy right now for saying this. I've got voices in my head. But I can have conflicting ideas in my head at the same time. "Help me" and "leave me alone" would sound perfectly normal to me.
Yeah.
What are you, crazy?
No, it must be.
So, no, there's nothing wrong with an internal dichotomy, right? That's You know, maybe they should have dressed it up by having, you know, one character being portrayed by, you know, someone and the other character being portrayed by someone else so that it's a little bit clearer for everyone. But, you know, look, Lou, everyone knows that every person's made up of little people that sit inside your brain. And, you know, I thought this was well known.
Yeah. I just don't like getting in arguments with those little things because sometimes they win. You know, I'm at a loss. I don't know what to say to you anymore. I'm talking to me, by the way. Mm-hmm. or leave me alone. Stop it. Leave me alone.
Okay, let me ask you a question on this, because now it gets to the point where we've had a couple of, like, Trek episodes, like Man of the People, which I always get confused with this episode, or at least, you know, the main dude. Is it Man of the People I'm thinking about? I'm thinking about the one... I'm thinking about the one where Troy gets, where she ages, right? Where she gets, like, dumped on by. Is that Man of the People? Is that Violations? I always get confused. But
Violations is the one with telepaths.
Yes.
Does Man of the People have telepaths in it, or is that the
Man,
one?
Man of the People is the guy that kind of uses her as his plot. He dumps all his emotions into her, and she just gets old very quickly.
Oh yeah.
Okay. And how's that different from Violations then? What's Violations?
So Violations is the three telepaths that come on board and they try and, like, they focus on one little bit, but, like, the old guy's a bit rapey.
Yeah, Violations, she gets tele-raped.
Okay, so both those episodes, there is a telepath on board that's a little bit suspicious because she's doing dodgy things to another telepath. So right. The question that I have is that who saw Mequis and him doing all of this and thought, well, he's a bit dodgy? So are we expected to think that Mequis is not not entirely above board here?
I think if there was supposed to be that element in this, I don't think it came across too strongly. Because Mequis never really seemed that dangerous. At worst, it was going to be that Mequis was causing the problem but doing it accidentally.
Yeah.
I don't think it was ever malicious.
I got the feeling we were supposed to think, this again. Another bunch of telepaths. What are they going to do to her this time? Or something. But then we find out very quickly that, no, he was pretty harmless. But she did, you know, she went after him because she walks in, he walks into 10-4 to look at her and, "What are you doing?" Well,
yeah, exactly. That I thought this was the way, you know, this is where they were going. And considering that I think they've already done this at least twice before, I kind of thought, well, and also that the fact that I think, you know, the fact that the guy can't really speak, you know, can't communicate well, I kind of thought that they were going for this, you know, kind of, you know, potential outsider as being, you know, the clear quote unquote scapegoat that they should be focusing on.
Well, misdirection, I think that's what it was. They wanted us to think that. However,
I think if they wanted us to think that, it didn't work. Because I never thought that.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's because he's got a daughter kicking about and she's quite young and he's just this nice dad who's struggling to come to terms with what language he's speaking in because he's still learning it. It just looks like a guy who's trying to do his best.
Mm-hmm. So I will re-echo if they were trying to do this through misdirection, I don't think it worked, and it's not. I don't think it's necessarily good enough to have, you know, like a car crashing going, ah, misdirection, you know, because I don't think it's clever enough, right? I felt that it wasn't gelling, and I was just wondering whether that's where they were expecting us to be going emotionally. Anyway.
Well, I mean, you know, she, Luoxana passes out whenever she has problems, whenever she's near him. She passes out when she's with him. He comes walking into the sick bay and is staring at her in the dark. I think they tried to make it look like he might be a suspect of some kind. But like you say, you know, he came off as too harmless from the beginning.
Yeah. The bit in sickbay is where is the only way I would think at any point they were trying to make it seem like Makeweez was doing this maliciously. But it's even then, it was kind of like cut to the break and then we'll come back and actually, no, he was just there to try and help. And this is how it's going to help. So it very quickly turned back again. It might have worked better if you actually had the break, because obviously I was watching this and there was no break at any point. So it just went from Makeweez and sickbay, oh, that might be dangerous. Oh, actually, I'm here to help. It was that quick. So you never really concerned about it too much.
Yeah. And one thing we did completely forget to talk about was a little purple thing that Deanna was wearing for the reception. It's like a skin-tight purple little suit with their right shoulder hanging out. Looking pretty sexy there, guys.
What? Lou, last week you were going on about what Troy was wearing.
Was I? I don't remember.
You were, and it was because it was the gown. She was in the gown in sickbay.
Yeah. Well, you know.
There's nothing amuses me more about Star Trek The Next Generation than the fact that Deanna Troi never looked better than when she was in a Starfleet uniform. And it took 5.5 seasons worth of episodes to get her to that point, and even then it took Captain Giacco to tell her to do it.
Well, yeah. You know, and I remember reading that she was happy because she didn't like being in these things. And you're right. Damn, she looks sexy in that Starfleet uniform. But then again, what? So did Ashley Judd, too.
True.
Okay, so I thought you were referring to Kirsten Dunst for a second there. Nope, you're right.
Ashley Judd.
Slightly more appropriate.
Slightly. No, Kirsten Dunst,
Spider-Man, maybe. Kirsten Dunst is Star Trek, no. Not going there, sorry.
I'm trying to remember what other things Kirsten Dunst was in, and I thought for some reason, as an older actress, I'll say, she was pretty damn hot, but I don't remember. I might be confusing her with another blonde actress that she played in, like, Sweet Home Alabama or Legally Blonde.
That's Reese Witherspoon, isn't it?
Reese Witherspoon. Okay. See, I think I'm confusing them two together. So
the only thing I could think of, I've seen Kirsten Dunst in, was Spider-Man, because she was Mary Jane in Spider-Man. The one with Tobey Maguire as Spider-Man.
Oh, okay.
That was acceptable. She was older than us.
Well, you know, and she didn't look familiar to me as Hedril, but when I looked up, when I was reading the guest stars and I saw Kirsten Dunst, I'm like, oh, wait a second, I know that name. But I couldn't quite place it, and I thought, oh, Sweet Home Alabama, Legally Blonde. No, I'm getting that completely wrong. So maybe I'll look her up later. So Deanna decides to do the telepathic mumble-jumbo and get into Luoxana's head. And here she is walking around the corridor of the ship, hearing, help me! And then the wolf. Do you guys consider this a bottle episode to where they're only using a few sets?
Yes. Nothing sums up how bottle this episode is than the fact that they go to the lake, or the house on whatever lake it was. And so the house that she meets her father in is quite clearly just another Enterprise quarter. With the light outside, which is bizarre. it's two bottle at this point. They really needed a different set for that.
Well, why did they even mention that? So it seemed like someone either put it up to a dare, or they thought, oh, you know, people are going to have questions here. So Troy literally walks into this room that's clearly just someone's quarters and goes, oh, is this my old house? Oh, my old house by the lake. Yes, I can see the lake just outside this window. I mean, it's trailed on so thick that there's no reason. They don't even need to say it. They said they can just have the conversation in the Enterprise, which they did have. It's just that they, before they had the conversation in the Enterprise, they did a pretend about how they're not in the Enterprise. So I don't know. And the same thing, right, when they're in the when they're by the lake, which is that's the fact
which
that
we is just clearly the arboretum.
Yeah.
I mean, I can even understand the idea that Lexana Troy's mind is the Enterprise, given she's the computer.
Oh, yeah. Very good. Very good.
Okay. So, what do you think of Deanna's dad?
He's a keen face.
Kind of, yes. Besides a kind face, we
of all the odd things to say about someone, like Picard comes in and says he has a kind face.
Yeah,
I know he's trying to be like complimentary to someone he's never met and has only seen in a photo. But
well, I mean,
I can't think of anybody I would ever describe as having a kind face.
What's he going to say? A handsome guy.
Yeah. That would be- good looking guy. There we go. That would be more of a normal response. Kind face is. Maybe it's just the way he says it, or I don't know. It's like he looks like a nice guy.
Yeah.
If that's what you're trying to say, then say that. Kind face. It's just, there's something very odd about it. But I did quite like the way that Laxana's mind was trying to distract Deanna. So it tries Picard ordering her, it tries a wolf to scare her away. It then tries what daddy talked to you, so that can distract you for a while. Because that was probably the hardest one that she could get away from, because obviously she hasn't seen her father since she was 7. So to have a chance to talk face to face with them would have been quite an emotionally difficult point for her to say, no, I need to go.
It kind of reminded me of Jack Crusher in his little, in Wesley's holodeck recreation of Jack in his letter, which was really cute, by the way, really cool. I think I rated that one pretty damned high. But here we go again with another of the old era uniform. I mean, this goes back to a Wrath of Khan uniform.
Yeah, I can never keep track of how the uniforms evolve over time, because sometimes they've got, when you go back to Wrath of Khan, they've obviously got a big kind of puffy undershirt, and then when you get late enough, they don't have any undershirt like they did on the Enterprise C, or they did with Jack Crusher. But Ian Troy seems to have some sort of undershirt, but it's not a big collar one. Yeah. So they kind of mess about with that uniform quite a few times, but they still generally have the pepper maroon top. That doesn't change in like 90 years of Star Trek.
I mean, it was pretty much the same as what we saw with in Tapestry, right? With the Picard's old uniform, which I would have thought would have been around the same time. You know, I imagine he's about Picard's age, or would have been in that, you know, plus or minus. Yeah, okay, maybe Picard's age, maybe, you know, 5 years younger, 10 years older, possibly, depending on his age, and.
Oh, okay. So that uniform lasted pretty long into the 24th century.
Well, it's not just that, right? If you look at the Enterprise B and the Enterprise C, and I don't know which one's expected to have lasted that long, but you have this like gulf in between, you know, between Kirk signing off and Picard signing on, and there's like nothing changes in the middle. So you've still got the Excelsior ships from Kirk's age into the next gen, and then the end, yeah, and the you know, the shirts look effectively the same. That's just frozen in time.
Okay. All right. So they come out. She comes out of this little, I don't know what you call it, telepathic bonding, and starts looking for clues, going through some old journals, and I thought, journals? Do you guys do journals? I don't.
Oh. We used to. Don't know.
I need to start a journal. Where would I start it at? Okay. But that's when she decides, well, she's going to go back in one more time. And if it starts going bad, I'm going to tell him to break it off. But that's when we come across again. What do you think of Deanna finding the doorway to space and just jumping through?
Okay, actually, before we do this, one thing I wanted to mention is they're having the discussion in the ready room, in the observation lounge. And they're talking about dreams but projection in someone's memory. And Data talks about my research into dreaming. And it's almost as if he's saying, as I learned last episode,
yes.
Sometimes when you come across crazy stuff like this, it's not quite what it seems.
Yeah. Tech, for instance,
a nice callback.
Yes.
Well, but also, in a way, I mean, do you really think that Troy, who's a counselor and a trained psychologist, needs to be told by Data that sometimes you have to look beyond the obvious? You know, if anything, you know, Data is a machine that processes the obvious, and Troy is someone who's had 30 years of training, you know, looking at the human side. And now we're this is a role reversal. As odd as when Troy beats him at a game of chess, and we don't call it out as much because it's just Troy. But Data shouldn't. He's not the character to mention this, or he shouldn't be. Yeah. Troy shouldn't.
This was one criticism I had of the episode was that when I first thought about it, was that Data makes a comment about how he thinks Hedro's just a dream, an aspect of a dream where it can represent something else. And I thought what Data was trying to say was he was going down a path of what actually that means, that she's not actually representing a little girl, she's just representing like youth or some other thing that's absolutely nothing to do with anything. And my first thought was, but then why would the actual Hedro make her sad? But now that you've said that, I'm thinking, mate, because Data's just a learning psychology of dreams. He's learned something and he's trying to put it together in the wrong way. So actually, that's quite interesting that it comes out that way then, because it's Data applying what he knows in the wrong way, and maybe somebody like Troy could just slap him down and go, you make a good point, but you're forgetting X, Y, and Z because you haven't learned this yet.
Wow. Okay. Well, anyway, she jumps into space and lands in an arboretum of some kind. Where? Luwak said, go away. Leave me alone. I thought that acting was kind of bad, too. But we get to the heart of the matter. Something happened in Luwaxana's past. And they walk through it together, where we find out that she actually had a daughter named Kestra, who died when Deanna was, what, a few months old, maybe? Less than a year. And
So I appreciate that Deanna's like half Betazoid, but the baby there isn't a few months old. The baby there, if they are a few months old, then they're not teething. They're aliens. They might just grow up very, very quickly. I know, but
Naomi did.
Yes, indeed. the big problem is that between the ages of. It's been a while now since I've had a really small one, but my recollection was between like 0 and 9 months, that's just a sack of potatoes that sit there and then they can't even hold up their own head. So, right. You know, anything like this is at least 9 months old, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, it's not far off. Yeah. But then I think that was not the kind of impression that Deanna was just like, I can't remember exactly what Picard said when he was talking about the deleted entities, but it was up to like Deanna was about a year old.
Oh, I thought it was only a couple of months, but yeah, I'm nitpicking because I think the thing is that I'm always, they never actually have proper newborn babies. even when they give birth, the babies you see when they give birth, they're at least like 2 months old.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You never see actual proper babies unless you're watching like some kind of, I don't know, proper medical expose or something.
Well, I'm just thinking, you know, where are they going to find their actors? you know, go to the maternity ward, grab a baby, and say, we're going to put her in Star Trek.
No, I know. It's just always something that's always bugged me.
Yeah.
So Memory Alpha says that the 7 years of deleted entries start about a year after her parents were married and end a few months after Deanna's birth. So if she's deleted Kestra from all of that, then you're suggesting Deanna's only a few months older. So which point I would agree with you. That's the Deanna that we see is older than just a few months. Unless a few something means about nine.
Okay, here's a question. So now we get to the point where the whole thing comes out, and we see Kestra with the dog, trying to hold the dog back, wants to play with the dog by the water. No, don't do that. Then Deanna starts to cry, and if Deanna hadn't cried, Kestra would be alive. If the dog hadn't run away, Kestra would be alive. How did Kestra die?
So I assume that she drowned.
My assumption is that she drowned, but yeah, it almost kind of annoys me that we don't... It's never said explicitly in the episode what happened. It was an accident. She was chasing after the dog, which escaped. She wanted to go and play by the water before the dog escaped. So
she either drowned or got eaten by the dog.
She could have been eaten by the dog, yeah. I suppose that's possible.
She could have what?
I never found out what happened to the dog.
Eaten by the dog. The dog ate her.
It was a chihuahua. I mean,
But, well, but by the way, I mean, let's say that you did have this really bad experience. And look, I know I'm being a monster here again. Don't you think that you would have been triggered by dogs? So... You know, she obviously got triggered by the little girl looking the right age and stuff like that. But you could also be triggered by dogs. Why hasn't she had a breakdown before when she found, you know, when she came across a dog?
Well, yeah, this is what I was saying earlier about the fact that it's not just the fact that there's a little girl that reminds her of Kestra. It's the fact that there's a little girl that reminds her of Kestra when she's already mentally exhausted from all the work that she's doing. So yeah. Had there been a dog on the Enterprise D, maybe that would have triggered her just as well.
Yeah. No, I know.
But, you know, and I'm still trying to, you know, the water in the whatever that arboretum was, the water could not possibly have been deep enough for an 8-year-old or 7-year-old girl to drown. Unless she, like, hit her head, fell into the water, and they didn't notice her for 5 minutes. It just seems so strange.
But yeah, I don't think it's helped by the fact that this is a redress. It's not even a redress. It's a completely carbon copy of the Arboretum on the Enterprise. I can imagine that in the real situation that's not in Waxana's head, it was a bigger lake. So it was probably easier to go chasing after a dog and drown.
Yeah.
Or she slipped and fell down the waterfall or something like that.
There's no waterfall in there.
No,
is there?
Not there. No, of course not there. The problem is the way they've done the set design here is that there's literally no way she could have been out of the parents, you know, field of view, let alone telepathic field of sensing. So, yeah, it doesn't quite work. But anyway, look, this is nitpicky, and I'm sure that it's just, you know, we're not seeing the reality here. We're seeing the vision. So, yeah, it could have been anything, right?
So they could have been on the beach for all we know, but she's just this. So in other words, this recreation is an exactitude. They could have been on the beach and she drowned in the ocean.
Yeah.
Well, they said it was a lake. Definitely.
Okay.
A lake.
Okay, so it's a lake. Yeah, it's same difference. I mean, lake is going to get pretty deep, but you know, I'm looking. You know, you look at this body of water in this arboretum and. There's no way that little girl would have just stood up and walked out of the water just like Hedril did. She had to have hit her head, but I mean, how long were they staring at Deanna's screaming face before they realized that she was there? They skip straight from the crying right to where they're both looking at her or they're just looking ahead, but there's nothing about. There's no investigators there. There's no doctors there trying to save her life. They're just looking at her. And it just seems so... It was such a bad cut. I think they should have had more on what happened.
Yeah. I think this is the problem with the point that the story or the episode falls down quite a bit, is that they rush this bit far too much. There's not that big an impact on what we're hearing. I would have liked to have seen more of this part in our head. I'm limited by like a 45-minute show, but to have padded this out a bit and see exactly how the trauma happened. And I mean, I'm not saying let's watch a little girl drown.
but at least
stretch it out a bit and show that she ran off, and then but they were too busy to notice that she'd ran off, because they only showed a very small clip of here's the Anna crying, and then they cut back to it and just let Waxana fill in the gaps in a very short space of time. Whereas they could have probably shown that, so it's more of a case of show don't tell. Yeah. We didn't have enough of that.
Alright. And of course, they were showing a picture of, you know, they put the camera right in front of the dog's face, and they must have done something to piss it off because it started to snarl at the camera. But, I mean, that was a, you know, little dog had big, ferocious sounds. Yeah, I don't know. It's the whole thing of if they were in a little room like that and she chased the dog, they should have seen it. If she had fallen into water, they would have heard it. If she had hit her head on something and screamed, they would have heard it. They would have went in after her. It just seemed like they totally ignored her for just enough time to kill herself. And it doesn't work for me. And I guess that's because, you know, I'm a daddy now. I don't want a kid to fall and die. But anyway. Jeez.
Now that I'm a dad, I don't want kids to fall and die.
Yeah, so 20 years ago, I probably said, oh, who cares? No, that's not it. But I'm saying, you know, they just cut too much out to really understand what happened. You know, so.
Yeah.
And then we never get to hear, you know, she could have spent 1 minute talking about Kestra and what she was like. But they don't.
No, we just see an image of Kestra who looks nothing like Hedro, by the way. She's got a brunette. But then, like, she basically has a very quick moment with Kestra, sorry. And then Kestra says, oh, I have to go.
Yes.
They're in your head. Why do you need to go?
Yeah. Do you think that was just an image of her, or do you think that was the real Kestra?
I think the bit we saw at the end was the real Kestra, the little brunette girl.
Okay, so when we're looking at them in the Arboretum, though, and, you know, she's got the dog, we're looking at Hedril.
Yeah. What? Which is why her mind's a bit messed up, because it's... they used Hedril's image with or without the brain bumps. Depending on whether it was Hedril or Kestra that she was supposed to be portraying. The only time we see the actual Kestra when her mind finally lets go and allows her to think of Kestra as Diana suggests in her happy moments and as a happy little girl who had a tragically short life, that's the real Kestra that we finally see. She's finally been let out of the locked area of Laxana's mind.
Okay. Yeah, okay. I was really confused about why am I looking at Hedril, and then in the next shot, I'm looking at a different, whole different girl altogether. Okay, that makes sense now. Okay, so, you know, they come out of this telepathic thing holding hands, which, how'd that happen? I mean, did they grab their hands and put them together or something?
She reached over. I mean, it's not as if Data popped by, right? And connected them.
Yeah, okay, yes. Captain, why are their hands not together? Here, let's do this. Okay, thank you,
Data. While they're sleeping.
Yeah, right. Thank you, Data. Okay, well... it's been a pretty plain episode except for at the end. So, I mean, I don't know. This is a tough one. So, would I miss anything?
There's one bit that really annoys me about this episode that I spotted right at the end. So, the episode ends with Diana and Laxana sitting in the quarters looking at a picture of the family when Kestra was there. And we hear that Mr. Holmes saved the photo. We contacted Mr. Holm earlier in the episode and he knew nothing about, oh, I don't know what possible trauma there could have been.
Oh, maybe right. Red.
Yes. But yeah, he's holding on to this picture. I mean, yeah. He was holding on to this picture just in case you might ever want it. But, yeah.
But I've no idea what that trauma could be. No, I got a clue. What will girls? What do you mean?
And she even says she talked to Mr. Holm. Are you sure? He doesn't talk. He won't talk to you. He's not supposed to talk to you.
She got she got Loxana's personal journals from Mr. Holm.
Yes.
And she'd asked him what that possible traumatic event could be. He said, I don't know.
Well, I don't have a clue what it could be. Oh, but I do have this picture in case you want it. Yeah. But still, the point is he's not supposed to talk to anybody but Loxana, right? Or was that another?
Yeah, he doesn't talk much. I remember that. But unless he's thanking you for the food or the wine or whatever it was he was thanking us for in that episode. But yeah, he must be able to communicate to some extent that Tiana was able to ask him questions and get the journals from him.
Maybe it was just on, Facebook Messenger. Who knows? Okay. Well, did I miss a lot of stuff? Anything?
I just think it's such a tragic family. So we've got Kestra dies when she's young. Ian dies a few years after that. Deanna then grows up.
And
Deanna has a child in the second season that gets killed off. I know it's an alien child, but obviously that's another one that kind of dies pretty quickly. She then eventually marries Riker, has two children, one of which gets killed off.
Ah, man.
Hang on. Are we assuming Picard's canon here?
Yeah.
Hmm.
Huh?
Okay.
Huh?
Not convinced. But anyway, it's all good.
Yeah, but, yeah, I mean, that episode that we meet Riker and Troy and Picard calls back to this very episode because they then have the son who was called Thad, which came from Thaddeus Riker in the Voyager episode. The one with Q, I think. And then the daughter that's still alive is called Kestra, obviously named after the sister that Deanna couldn't remember.
Hmm. Okay. All right then. Well, I can't think of anything else that we got to talk about. So I guess it's now time for our final thoughts and ratings on this episode on a scale of 1 to 5, with 1 being the worst and 5 being the best. And I'll try and be a better host, Chris, and let you go first this time.
Okay. So, like I said at the start, I really enjoyed this episode. I didn't when I was younger. I didn't think there was much in it. Obviously, I understood the concept of the tragedy and stuff like that. But I think I understand. Now I'm older, have children of my own, I could understand exactly how traumatic that would be. Thankfully, I haven't had to live it. And hopefully never will.
Yeah.
So I think the main thrust of the episode, probably I understand it better now than I did when I first seen the episode. But also, when I was watching it, I was picking up the different kind of things about the way the different telepaths communicate, the willing to communicate in a different way than you're used to. I said at the start, there wasn't a B-plot in this, but there's enough in the A-plot that I'm invested from start to finish. And as we just talked about, when it gets to the end, there's still not enough time to show it properly. And I think that's probably what lets down the episode as a whole, is that the trauma at the end isn't really paid off enough for what we've gone through the rest of the episode. And I think I would have liked that to be longer. And maybe that would have bumped this episode up. But in conclusion, I think it's a really good episode. It's not action-packed. Like, if you want action, go watch something else. But in this one, I think it makes you think quite a bit. And I think kudos to the makeup artist in this one, because Loxana really did look quite crap. She looked like she'd had a 2020. It was actually bad she looked. I don't look much better these days, but I've not collapsed into a coma or anything, so I'm probably still doing better than she is. But yeah, I would give this an episode of 4 out of 5. I really enjoy it and happy to watch it again. It touches on quite a good few good things. So, yeah, 4 out of 5.
Okay. All right. All right, James, how about you?
I mean, maybe we should just ignore me this week.
this I'll take you out of the episode altogether.
I think that's probably wise. I don't know. I don't feel this episode. Look, you know, the entire episode's handed over to this particular story. I don't think they really run with it. I don't think they really make it that interesting. I don't particularly like the aliens that are introduced. I don't like the fact that they can't talk properly. I don't like the fact that they have got, you know, even the twist on the on how they communicate telepathically. I just, you know, it's skin deep, right? There's nothing behind it, as far as I can tell. I don't feel like I should be able to understand their society or understand them differently based on, you know, this just one throwaway line. You know, they might as well have said something like, "Oh, you know, we think in black and white," and it just didn't seem to be anything that added much. I didn't like the fact that the I would have thought that we were. I think that we're expected to think that the Maquis guys was supposed to be someone that might have posed a threat, but I didn't feel like that was really there either. I don't know. And what was all this about anyway? I mean, once Troy found out the truth, there wasn't anything. There really wasn't any kind of working through the emotions here, right? It was just, you know, making Deanna aware of the event seemed to fix it all, which I'm not entirely sure that that's correct. I'm not sure that, you know, maybe it's the first step, sure. But I just didn't feel that it just didn't do much for me. Look, I don't like this episode. I didn't particularly get much out of it. Do you need me to rate it?
Okay, well, Chris, thanks for coming on. I'm going to go and hang up on James real quick, and then you and I will just finish this out.
I want to know. I want to know what score out of 5 he gets.
And in fact, Chris, would you mind taking over for James starting next week?
You know what? I like that. I like the different opinions.
By the way, maybe one thing I should mention is that I usually reserve ones for episodes that cause me pain.
Oh, no, you now, can't.
I don't know whether this caused me enough pain.
Oh, God.
So maybe on the grounds that I felt nothing rather than I felt pain, it might get a 2. But it's borderline, okay? It really is. So, yeah,
that's funny. Clearly
I have the emotional range of a rock and, you know, clearly have no connection to, to children or any kind of loss of innocent life.
Yeah, you've had too many of them, I guess. You're becoming immune to them.
They're practically disposable.
Ah, man. You know,
I tend to agree with it. You only give ones to the ones that really pain you.
Yeah.
Remember that when we get to Sub Rosa.
Oh my gosh.
You know, the thing is, I'm not convinced that Sub Rosa is a worse episode than this.
Oh. Saving up.
Okay, who's on for Sub Rosa? Oh, you're on, Chris. We got 2 Chrises. All right. Okay. Well, I don't know about the other Chris. Well, hopefully. I'm not going to go there. Okay, so yeah, we'll see about that on Sub Rosa because I already know what my rating is, but I don't even need to watch it.
I could just give mine away.
Yeah, no kidding. I think I just gave it away. So here we are over an hour into this podcast and James still hasn't given us his rating because he still doesn't know what to give it. So do you want to think a few more minutes, James, or do you have that number yet?
No. Well, okay, look, we'll give it a 2. It'll be a 2. Put me down for a 2. I can live with a 2. I can live with a 2.
No, so. Okay. All right. So, okay. This is a very, very sad episode. It comes, you know, and I'm watching this sad episode on a sad day. So I guess maybe my, I said it earlier, my feelings for this episode have changed since this morning, because I would have came down closer to where James was. I'm serious. I would have. But the end of the episode would have still bumped it up at least one for me. Because of what the revelation is for Luoxana. I like Luoxana, Troy. I always have. I don't know about Nurse Chapel or Number One, but I like Luoxana, Troy. And so when she comes on, she usually is a ratings booster herself. And this one, I think they do her wrong, the way they make her look, the what they do to her in this episode. But I appreciate what they did, what the story, the ending story was a lot. It's very touching. It's very sad. I did cry. I'll be honest. But it wasn't solely because of Kestra dying. It was also what's going on in my life and what happened this morning and some of the devastating to me news. You think 40 years that I haven't seen somebody, why am I so broken up about it? Well, truth be told, you know, somebody you fall in love with 40 years ago, I never fell out. I still am. I may be married to somebody else. She got married to somebody else, but I still am. I always will be. So, and then I see this episode and see this little girl die. And it was just so, it just hit me hard. So that's why I'm bumping this up another score for it. Despite the story flaws about the species, the way they're described, their telepathicness about them, Deanna even says, we Betazoids, we do telepathy by words. They do telepathy by images. And I think in the end, we got cheated by not seeing any images. I would have liked to have seen images flash into Deanna's head as he was looking at her. I don't know if that's something they couldn't have done, or would it have cost too much to do, but why even tell us that they do telepathy by images if they had no intention of even showing that to us? They could have taken a couple minutes away from the party. I didn't need the Mr. Wolf. I certainly didn't need her chewing out Riker, because I don't think it's his fault. If Deanna's still hung up on him and she's choosing to be on his ship, well, that's not his fault. He certainly has gone on, hasn't he? But anyway, what else do I want to say? But yeah, in the end, I was heartbroken about this one. It is very, very touching and sad. So, you know, I'm not crazy enough to give it a 5. That wouldn't make any sense. I can't put it in the best of both worlds or yesterday's Enterprise. It doesn't fit in that shelf. But it was an easy 3 for me. And maybe what I'm going through now is forcing me. But I'm up to a 4 today. I may be back down to a 3 in a few weeks. But now I'm giving it a 4 as well. And like we usually do at the end of the series, or the end of the season, and now the end of the series, we could change our ratings if we want to. But for today, I am going for a 4. So I'm there with you, Chris. Okay. So is there anything else we guys want to discuss?
I think you're right about Luoxana, Troy. I think she's probably the character that I have done the biggest 180 about in Star Trek history, because I couldn't stand Luoxana Troy when I was younger, and now I think she's one of the best characters in it, across TNG and DS9.
Oh yeah, especially in DS9.
Yeah.
I mean, the way she goes after...
Is brilliant.
Oh man, the way she goes after Odo is just it's even better than when she was going after Picard.
Yeah.
So anyway.
So by the way, is this episode is before the DS9 episode, right? Chronologically, or is it after?
Actually, it's after. She was in the first season of Deep Space Nine, wasn't she?
Yeah, so it's after.
So this would be after that.
Oh wow.
It's the last appearance in TNG.
Say that again. I didn't get that.
Did she come back to DS9?
You mean after this episode?
After she went, she did one episode in DS9, right? Did she do a second? She did do a second. Yeah. No, she. Yeah, right, sorry, I've just Googled. She turned up. Yeah, much later on. Yeah. Okay. No, so this isn't her final. She turns up twice. Of course, she turns up, and she turns up with the on Love Day. She turns up on that's a great episode, Love Day, right?
Yeah, she projects her feelings of everybody and other people. Yeah, so she's whispering them three times, is she not?
Yeah. Absolutely. That's correct. It's stuck in the turbo lift with Odo, Love Day, and then holy moly, I'm pregnant.
What do you mean Love Day? What does that mean? Is that an episode name for DS9?
Yes, it is. It is. It's the official name of the episode. So it's the Bajoran. It's Fascination.
Bajoran Gratitude Festival.
Also known as Love Day, right? So it's everyone puts in little things into the fire and it's about being grateful. But Laxana turns up and she has headaches and then she projects and then isn't it Jake goes after Dax and everyone gets horny. Love Day.
Now I think Jake went after. Didn't Jake go after?
No,
Kira?
After Kira. Yeah, absolutely.
And the best of all,
she would have broken him in not in half, but in quarters.
In quarter, yeah, at least. And the best of all was Quark going after
Keiko
O'Brien. Yeah, the look on her face. Yeah, right. Oh, that was good. Yeah, that's a stupid episode, but it's funny. Oh yeah,
it's not stupid.
Anyway, okay, maybe someday we'll get there. Say how long anymore. All right, so next week, I guess that's it, Chris. Thank you for coming on, and hopefully we get to do this again soon. 4 episodes from now is when we have you on for Parallels.
Excellent.
That's good. I mean, we've turned around 4 episodes in the last 4 weeks, so we're doing good.
We've recorded 4 episodes in the last 4 weeks. That doesn't mean we've put them out that way.
Look, recording it is the hard part.
Yeah, definitely. No, yeah, that is true. Well, that is true. But and then the harder part is trying to get it online. And now I'm encountering errors whenever I use WordPress. It's telling me how many redirects there are in each of our uploads. So I'm not sure what all that's about. I may have to get with Mark someday on it. But it seems to be it's still posting. You can still get it. You can still download it. So as long as that works, I don't care what it says. But, all right. So, everyone, join us next time as we review episode 8 of season 7, and that is Attached. Until then, take care and good night.
Night.
Good night.